You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm your host, Dr. Kristen Lierley. And today, it's a cross-generational political showdown. Not really, but kind of. So I'm a Gen Xer who is quite literally surrounded right now by Gen Z dudes, including my own son, Abe. Say hey, Abe.
Hello, hello. I'm off from... You know what? Give me 1 second.
It's not on camera. Hey, Abe. All right. We're going to talk about some of the most controversial political topics that are dividing America today. And this conversation could get messy. We very well could enter that territory that makes Thanksgiving dinner awkward and has family members blocking each other on Facebook. We'll see. We don't know where it's going to go. But for me, I'm coming at this as somebody who grew up during the Reagan years and lived through 9/11 as a young adult. Actually, Abe, you were pretty much crawling around on the floor as we were watching all that go down. And I've watched my own kids grow up in this world that looks nothing like the one that I thought they'd inherit. And these three gentlemen with me today, Abe and Alan and Landiron, they are the ones who are going to be living with the consequences of today's political decisions for the next 60 years. So we're going to talk about Donald Trump and socialism and climate change and identity politics and whatever else comes up, and whether America is worth saving or needs to be completely reimagined. Yeah, we're going there. And adding to the fun on the boards, we have Conrad, our outstanding producer, who is amazing, but he is not at all political. Yeah, Conrad would prefer to just talk about sports.
Yeah, that's great.
But, you know, I think that that's a really important perspective because I think there are a lot of people who feel that way. And those, your opinion is important and needs to be expressed. So feel free to jump in anytime, Con.
All right, sounds good.
And, you know, if you have a sports analogy, that's welcome too.
Okay.
So here's the plan. We're going to have an honest conversation. We may step on each other's toes a little bit. And maybe even make each other a little mad. But that's exactly why these conversations matter. We don't have to agree, but we do have to hear each other. And we have to be able to engage in thoughtful, respectful conversation. So buckle up. Let's find out what happens when different generations stop being polite and start being real about American politics. My guests today are my oldest son, Abe. He's a public school teacher. Abe, say hey.
Hello, hello.
Abraham Lierley, I should say. That's your full name.
Full name, yeah.
I know.
Just jumped in off camera, but just off to the side.
Yeah, we don't have enough camera space for Abe, so he'll pop in every once in a while. And sitting next to me, we've got Alan Tipple. He is the Wisconsin Youth Organizing Manager with Men for Choice. Welcome back, Alan.
Hello. I'm excited to be back.
I'm excited to have you. This whole conversation was inspired by you and the last conversation we had.
Yeah, we just had so much more conversation to have after we finished the last episode, so figured we'd keep going.
I have a feeling that that might be a theme with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you wanted to invite Landiron Kern, who is sitting in between Abe and Alan. Landiron is a UWGB student and someone who I've bumped into every once in a while over the last couple of years. Welcome, Landiron.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. All right, guys. So, I mean, let's just kick it off with the real question. The gender gap between men and women in the last election for people under 25 is 20%, which is double the gap for people over 25. And it's not just an American thing. This is like all across the world. So here's my question. Why are Gen Z men and women so divided, especially when it comes to politics?
Can I jump in real quick? And there's new information that's out, and there's new polling that's out. The YouGov CBS poll. That came out, I believe, a week or two ago. It has shown that the gender gap has dramatically closed, but there's still quite a bit that's going on. I mean, there's still so much that happened within 2024, and that gap was so noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so interesting to see that just a couple months into this new administration, that gap is almost gone back to what it was prior, or at least it is in polling. We have no idea what that would look like in the ballot box right
And
now,
to be fair, as a data person, that's one poll.
Just one, yeah, but it reflects a trend.
Yeah. I'd like to see that. Alan, your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a lot behind that question. I think it comes down to a lot of what happened during COVID and kind of online influencers I've seen a lot. Is that kind of during COVID, a lot of people in our generation got very disconnected, especially for people, you know, specifically my age. I lost, you know, my junior and, you know, senior year of high school, mm-hmm. where, you know, those like big events like prom happen, where people have those big social gatherings. And I missed out on a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people kind of were driven online and kind of were, you know, lonely during that pandemic.
Mm-hmm. But you guys grew up online.
True. Well,
to an extent,
not fully
online. There was definitely a change around the pandemic.
Yes.
Definitely sort of that forced online. There was a lot of people that didn't have exposure to being online that suddenly that was what they were doing for 12 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people saw that, you know, they had these disconnected men and decided to jump on it as an opportunity to maybe make some money. You know, you see these kind of online influencers like Andrew Tate, who, you know, say these things to get men, you know, like riled up against women, to, you know, want to prioritize wealth and, you know, getting their Bugatti or whatever. And they do that so that they can sell them a course.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kind of perpetuate this idea. And I think a lot of people a lot of men specifically who were lonely during that time, see this content and see this person as someone to look up to and then kind of fall into that. And then that's kind of a big, caused kind of a big gap because they start adhering to these ideologies that they're espousing.
Mm-hmm. And when other folks, not just Gen Z, young men see this, when it's promoted by actual political leaders,
yeah,
that just opens it up to a whole new arena of people. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Landaren?
Yeah, I definitely agree with what you say. I think when you have these influencers or people who come online and they act in that type of regard where it's okay to disrespect women or, you know, kind of be like a brochacho or what they believe is.
Brochacho?
Yeah, what they believe is what an actual man is. And I think that this has caused a massive increase in negative masculinity. I think that the way in which some figures that Alan had mentioned, such as Andrew Tate, betray mm-hmm. themselves and the way that they tell men that this is a way to be men is what causes this shift mm-hmm. Towards women and kind of this thought of whether or not they, you know, going back to the pay wage deserve what a man might make. And I think it's been very negative. And I think in the long run, it's going to affect men and women more than we see currently.
You bring up pay, and it makes me think about when I was a kid in the 70s, my mom couldn't even have a bank account. It was not legal for her to get a bank account. And she also couldn't get birth control without permission from her husband. And things had changed a lot since then. There has always been, you know, the pay gap and so many other things. Like there's been sexism and misogyny all along, but it felt like we were making gains. It feels now like we're losing ground. And it's not just things like a bank account or the freedom to be able to, you know, have a job or whatever. It's actual hate. It's danger for so many women. Where does that come from?
I think it's the same kind of influencers as that espousing that hate. On my drive up here, my 2-hour drive up here, I was kind of watching some content to try to get like an idea of what, you know, I wanted to like have good thoughts when we were talking on the podcast.
Uh-huh.
And this idea came up that like, you know, it's almost a cycle is that if you take lonely men and you tell them that the core of their problems is women and that's why they're lonely, they start having more negative attitudes towards women, which is just going to make them more lonely
mm-hmm.
because who's going to want to be around someone who hates them for the way they were born,
mm-hmm.
you know, hates them for being a woman, and they make money off of this, and so they're incentivized to keep doing this cycle over and over and over again.
I've had that thought in the top of my head. This isn't just something that happens. It's something that is directly incentivized by these platforms. Mm-hmm. You have, I mean, back to 2020, as everything seems to be, you had all these people who are suddenly experiencing this intense loneliness that they haven't had before. And in between, you know, TikTok videos of sourdough starters, you have almost this sort of rage bait material that not only, you know, you're angry, so you want to keep watching it. At least that's how I kind of find that stuff. Yeah. You know, like it gets me almost every time because I'm like, this is wrong. And I want to, like, something about it refuses to let you go on to the next thing. You want to finish that thought and complete your idea of why you dislike this. But at the same time that's happening, there is a group of people who connect with that material, who feel like it explains what they're feeling and offers a solution. And it the way that it's presented is so incremental as well, because it truly is sandwiched between videos of cooking and cats falling over and a dude driving a truck off a ramp. And then, like, there's all this content and you don't really realize how you're consuming it. It just slowly builds up over time. You end up sort of taking in ideas that you didn't recognize you would. And then if you look at these things without subscribing, it sort of propagates. You'll get more. The algorithm recognizes that you engage with it. So you slowly get fed more and more of this content. And it feels almost like this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. I don't know about you guys, but do you ever find, like, you're looking at your feed and you're like, oh, this is, I don't know when I got all these right-wing influencers. Just yesterday I started seeing just Jordan Peterson all over all over my YouTube shorts. I'm like, I don't know why he's here, but he keeps getting pushed.
So it's like the platform is infiltrating the things that you actually want to watch with things that they think you want to watch, or with things that are somehow making them money. So it kind of goes back to capitalism.
It all goes back to that. I mean,
oh yeah.
Yeah. It's a direct response to the incentives.
Yeah.
The medium is the message.
Yeah. And it's back to, like, the algorithm idea. Like you were saying, you know, if you watch something and even if you don't like it, if you just stay on it for long enough, mm-hmm. they'll think that, oh, this is what you want to see.
Right.
I know that the other day I was scrolling through TikTok or whatever. And I just kept getting angrier and angrier and angrier that I had to just put my phone down because it just kept giving me this content and I kept watching it because mm-hmm. it made me angry. And I think, yeah, exactly to your point, there are people who watch this because they like it and then they get it over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And they keep getting that kind of confirmation bias that this is the correct idea.
And you have to very intentionally put your hands on the wheel to kind of stop it. You have to go into the settings and say, do not show me this content. Like, it's, which is not something that I ever really end up doing.
It's not hard to do that.
It's not hard.
It's just something that is not part of what you do when you're just scrolling.
And it's not something that is easily presented or is explained well, uh-huh. as opposed to move your thumb up.
Yeah.
It's significantly more difficult.
Right, because they want you to consume, not consume.
Mm-hmm.
They want to sell you more, not less.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have so much more to talk about in this conversation. And Landiron, I want to hear more from you. But we do need to take a little bit of a break here. So I am talking right now with Alan Tipple. He is the Wisconsin Youth Organizing Manager with Men for Choice. Love all the work you're doing with Men for Choice, by the way. That's menforchoice, the number 4.org, if you want to hear more about them. Abraham Lyerly, he is my oldest son and a public school teacher. And a new guest to the program, Landiron Kern. He is a student at UWGB who is from my homeland. Actually, my family's homeland, Fond du Lac. Love that. All right. We're going to be back shortly. This is the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. You're listening to me, Dr. Kristen Lyerly. We're talking about Gen Z politics and all that fun stuff.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Hello and welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. Show. It's me, Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm hanging out with my Gen Z friends, my oldest son, Abraham Lierley, who is a public school teacher, Alan Tipple, who is the Wisconsin Youth Organizing Manager for Men for Choice, and Landyron Kern. He is a student at UWGB. We are talking about Gen Z, politics, the divide, all the spicy topics. But before we get back to that conversation, hey, Abe, did you recognize that song?
Yeah, I did. Was that, I can't remember the band name, but I think we just saw them at Mile of Music, didn't we?
Uh-huh. Horace Green.
Horace Green. They were incredible.
They were so good. You know, Mile of Music, a plug for that. It's like 200 bands. They're all over Appleton. Mm-hmm. People are out walking around to all the different venues. There's food. There's beer. There's
the beer
joy.
Costs less than Lambo and Summerfest.
Yes. And it's great for the musicians because the musicians get information about financial planning and filing their taxes and dental care and massages, and they get put up in hotels. It is a really cool event all around. And the people who come to watch are a cross section of the people who live in
the
area.
How much does it cost to get in?
It's exactly free.
Perfect.
Yes. So Horace Green, wonderful band. Find them on TikTok and Instagram. That's Green with an E at the end of it. Their videos are just funny and their music is
their performance
delightful.
Is funny.
Yeah. They're funny and good. But anyway, back to the task at hand. So we're talking about all these spicy issues. We're talking about Gen Z and the divide between men and women, which is appearing to be closing, hopefully. But there are still so many other things happening. Here's a question, a spicy question. And I'm going to send it to you, Landyron. Woke politics. Have we gone too far? Woke is just such a trigger word.
Yeah, I definitely feel like the way that right-wingers or Republicans use the word woke seems much more of a slur than what it actually is.
Uh-huh.
I think to be a woke or to be woke is to be is to understand and have an understanding of what is happening in politics and around the world. I think that it's just gained such a negative stigma around it, but I think it's a very positive thing. At times, it can definitely feel tiring being quote-unquote woke, especially as a poli-sci major. A lot of my studies is watching the news, watching different social medias, and trying to piece together my own thoughts and processes when, you know, you have people who are both on the right and left who kind of want you to be biased towards whatever angle they're trying to get to.
Of course, yeah.
And, you know, obviously, I lean a little more left, and I think that when people hear my discussions around politics, especially when all of my politics affect my life,
uh-huh,
that it's considered woke because a lot of people don't understand what it is to, you know, be a recipient of some of the programs and stuff that they offer.
Right.
Especially with someone who, such as I, who's on medical assistance, who gets benefits from food programs and things like that. And when I will try to discuss and talk about some of those incentives that the government gives, my friends will complain about how, or some of my former friends will complain about, you know, people who are freeloaders off the government and things like that.
Let's talk about that. I mean, that is such a huge issue right now. I grew up personally, so I have experience with this too. My family was on food stamps. We struggled. But now when you look at this big, beautiful bill that is terrible, and you know that we're cutting food assistance for people, you know that we're cutting health care for people. By the way, cutting health care for people does not mean that people aren't going to get health care. They're still going to go to the hospital, whether or not they can pay for it. And the hospital is going to have to eat those costs, and everybody's going to end up paying for it. That means all of our health care costs go up. So it's just mean. It's just cruel. But here you are, as somebody who is actually benefiting. How are you looking at the future and thinking, I'm going to be able to make this work?
I don't. Yeah. It's really difficult, especially when you have representatives who are supposed to be, you know, discussing the benefits of their constituents, and mm-hmm, they just don't. It's very difficult. Back to what I was saying about...
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail your thought.
friends calling people who get these benefits freeloaders.
Uh-huh.
I work very hard. I hold 2 to 3 jobs at a time. I pay for my own education along with the Pell Grants that I receive from the government. And to hear people say that, you know, I'm a freeloader sucks a lot because I am working very hard to, you know, one day become a very positive contributor to our economy.
Mm-hmm.
And when I am doing all of these things the correct way and, you know, having people tell me that I'm still freeloading, it really sucks.
Do you ever feel like, I feel like we often just get stuck in this, like, we have to be so dainty with how we're phrasing it. Like, you give me money because eventually I'm going to go on and I'm going to become a contributor to the economy. And at the end of the day, I kind of just want to grab somebody and shake them and say, I'm a person, you know, like,
oh yeah,
I'm trying to be better for myself and my community. And we can put a dollar sign to it. But like, I feel like so often, especially with this woke conversation, everyone just dances around what it means.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels, I don't know. It feels like sometimes I just want to like shout at somebody about it. Like, no, you're arguing against me.
Yeah, no, I had breakfast with my girlfriend and her grandparent yesterday, and they were kind of asking what I want to do as a career-wise, mm-hmm. and though I'm studying politics, I want to be an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And they were asking what kind of law that I want to get into, and the kind of law that I want to work in is criminal, but I've been leaning towards different types of law just because I've lived my entire life surviving mm-hmm. When it comes paycheck to paycheck and when it comes to what my family makes. Mm-hmm. And it gets to the point where you no longer want to survive. You just want to ensure that you never have to look at your credit card or something like that.
I want a good life. I want to be able to get a car and not have to think about, is that going to screw me for the next 7 years? You know, yeah. I want a house, 2 bedrooms. I'm not looking for a spiral staircase or a grand piano.
So when we come back from this short break, I'm going to ask you guys, it'll give you some time to think about this. Do you blame me? Do you blame Gen X and the boomers for screwing up the economy and the planet for your generation? Or do you have forgiveness in your heart?
Maybe. This is our rage bait.
This is Dr. Kristen Lowerly.
Don't swipe.
To the Dr. Kristen Lowerly Show.
What loves I used to have in life, they have passed. I'll bring them back when life ain't so fast.
The more I listen to these guys, the more I like them.
Arctic Monkeys mixed with funk.
Yeah, kind of. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lowerly Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lowerly, and I am joined today by Abraham Lowerly, my oldest son, who is also a public school teacher, and Alan Tipple, who is the Wisconsin Youth Organizing Manager with Men for Choice, and Landiron Kern, who is a student at UWGB. And hey, if you missed any part of our conversation, we're talking Gen Z, politics, all of the spicy topics. And before I ask the question, I just want to remind all of our guests that if they miss the beginning of the show, you can always find it wherever you get your podcasts, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, Substack, all the places. And you can always find me here on WGBW, WISS, and streaming on the Civic Media app. So fellas, I left you with a question to think about. You're not going to hurt my feelings, be honest. Do you blame Gen X and boomers for screwing up the economy, the planet, all of your futures, essentially? Is it my fault? Tell me.
I wouldn't say your fault.
Absolutely.
Not specifically you. But I think when it comes to the question of, do people in our generation blame boomers generations beforehand for the way the world is now? I mean, yes. Because, I mean, that is the generation that kind of made the world to be where we are at now. I mean, hopefully our generation will have an impact on generations to come after that. So yes, but also I think it is a systems problem. We mentioned it before, but capitalism as well is a big thing as well, because a lot of these things like the environment, like wage stagnation, housing price increase, is because of those capitalistic incentives.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a little bit of a give and take there between like the system that we choose, that generations have chosen to follow, is part of the reason for this, as well as kind of something you had mentioned before as well, Kristen, was that the kind of incentive to pull the ladder up from behind you,
mm-hmm.
you know, once you make it, then, you know, pull the ladder up so that you stay at the top and no one else can kind of cede that spot.
Mm-hmm. So is all capitalism bad? Gasping.
No, I suppose I'm ready for that question. I mean, I think that there's at this point, seeing what we are seeing in America, it kind of feels almost like this Ouroboros, like we're devouring ourselves and our culture is kind of devouring itself in the name of higher profits for everything. You know, that we're past this stage where we have, you know, small stores on every corner that you can, you know.
How do you even survive as a small business these days?
I don't know.
Or how do you survive as somebody who works at a small business? You know, can you get the benefits that you need to be able to live your life? I mean, Landyron, you talked about, you know, Medicaid and being able to get health care despite all the work that you're doing because you see a path forward. But there are a lot of people who are kind of stuck and just plain can't get what they need to live. Feel free to jump in, guys. Help him out.
Yeah, no.
So I guess rope.
I guess the point that we're at right now, and I've heard it said, you know, I understand the decisions that got us here. Mm-hmm. They make sense, and I don't understand where we are.
Yeah,
I understand every single step that got us here, but the point that we are at is just really hard to internalize and really hard to accept.
Right.
This point where small businesses need to provide healthcare and employee support, and they have, for every employee, this huge burden that they have to personally carry that only, you know, not only, but it's really hard for a restaurant to offer comprehensive healthcare.
Yeah.
It's hard for them to offer the people working back of house more than, you know, $12, $13, $14 an hour. I think we might be up to like $16 today, but, you know, that's hard fought. It's really hard to make employees feel valued. And it feels like the only companies that have the potential to do that are slowly trying to peel as much of that back as possible. We're losing maybe not quality of life, but we're losing little bits and pieces of our culture and of how we envision our future. And it feels like we're substituting it for a weekly trip to Walmart or one-day delivery from Amazon. And I do love one-day delivery from Amazon.
I do, too.
I do think that might be one of the greatest
modern
conveniences. Yeah, I think it is partially the problem.
Yeah.
And it makes it harder to find all these other things because, you know, I tried to get some fertilizer the other day. I went to 3 different local stores, couldn't find anything. Went to Walmart, couldn't find anything. At the end of the day, I just had to end up ordering it off Amazon. I wasn't looking for anything crazy. But I feel like the options are shrinking and shrinking and shrinking.
And it's so much more efficient because you know that it's going to be right there instead of going all over town and spending a half a day and not finding what you need.
But back to the original question of are we off in a worse spot because of the previous generations?
Mm-hmm.
It's that same idea of all the decisions that have gotten us here were almost reactive, it feels like. Lots of trying to patch holes. And now we're at a spot where it feels, I don't know when you guys talk to your friends, just like in terms of vibes in your friends group, how many of your friends feel like they're going to own a house in the next 40 years? I think I can name one and she's a doctor.
Yeah, not very many. I think often when politics comes up as a discussion or just like simply our future, it's usually this kind of like joking but semi-serious like, well, who knows?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know if I'm going to make it to 50, you know? Like,
is it hopelessness?
Well, so actually,
I would say, yeah.
When we were at the very top of the episode, when we were listing out all the things we were going to talk about, you were straight-faced the entire time, which is hard because you're staring right into the camera. Except for the moment where she said, and you're going to live with it for the next 60 years. And your eyes went right up. Your eyebrows are like, oh, God, 60 of these?
Yeah, it's easy to get through every day. Not easy, but I mean, you get through it one day at a time. But when you start thinking about your future and the things that you want or you always thought you were going to have, and you start to put together a plan, but the plan doesn't make sense because you can't put the pieces in place.
Yeah. So I guess you asked if it was hopelessness. Actually, Landyron, you first. How's your friend group react to that? Do you have a lot of friends who feel like they're on the right path and things are going good for them? Or is it like we're doing fine and treading water, but I don't see it getting better?
A lot of my friends with the group that I belong to, I would say, yeah, most are nervous. Mm-hmm. It's gotten to the point where, you know, especially for me, where I'm waking up in cold sweats. I'm anxious. I have anxiety because I'm always thinking.
You're having physical symptoms.
I do, and I'm only 19 years old. And for me to wake up in the middle of the night and worry that I'm not doing enough, when again, like I said, I work 3 jobs, and to feel like that it's still not enough to get to the point where I want to be, where, again, I'm no longer surviving, but I'm thriving in our world. And I think we're in some trouble. I mean, I think we're in a lot of trouble. And I think it's time for our government to step up.
Yeah. So if you could fix one thing, if you had a magic wand and you could fix one thing about our government, you could solve one problem, sexism, racism, making sure everybody has health care, housing, one thing, what would that one thing be?
That's a very tough question.
Because
all of those are great.
Uh-huh.
All those are great?
Yeah. To fix all of those things would be great, I should say. I think if I were able to change one of them, it'd be education. I think education covers all of it.
Uh-huh.
Education covers sexism. It covers housing, or, you know, how we're gonna, you know, make it more affordable for people to live.
Yes.
It covers a multitude of things. So I'd say education, because I think sexism, that racism, to understand how and why certain things affect certain groups and minorities, or, you know, large groups of people, I think it all falls under education. People need to understand why it's an issue.
So you become woke, right?
So
you become woke.
You gotta wake up.
What's going on?
You gotta wake up.
Woke is when you read. So actually, this has been stuck.
Public school teacher speaking up.
This has been stuck in the back of my head. We've given our sort of friend group's understanding of what we thought the future was. What was it like when you were growing up? How did your friends think about that? Because you came up in Kakana. It wasn't a rich area, but there were jobs.
Back when I was a kid, I never...
Put some film grain on the old-timey piano roll music.
I can honestly tell you that I never had physical symptoms thinking about not being able to get where I wanted to go in the future. And I never, never... couldn't find a place to live, even when I was like in college and just struggling. And I didn't have parents that had a lot of wealth. I mean, I lost my dad when I was young and my mom was struggling to get by. So I didn't have parents who were like feeding me money. I was able to buy a house when I was newly married, and that was a struggle, but we did it. There was a pathway. So it was different. It was possible, but it required a lot of determination and a clear path. Mm. I think that even for people who are very driven, I mean, Landiron, I hear you saying, I work all these jobs, I know what I want to do, but there are still so many barriers that it makes me feel like I may not be able to get there.
Absolutely. And then, you know, the physical symptoms aren't great at all. Just yesterday, I was at the doctor's. I had an appointment, and they've gotten to the point where they've discussed putting me on anxiety medication and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we should never get to that point as a society where I have to look towards medication to, you know, kind of relieve myself of all the stresses that I have. I'm 19. I shouldn't have to worry about my future. I should just be able to, you know, take my education, do what I'm supposed to do, and come out on the other side with hopefully a job prospect, hopefully an opportunity again to contribute, though it, you know, it sounds a little odd that I have to say that I want to contribute to our economy for people to
right.
you know, think that, you know, what I'm doing is good or important. I mean, obviously no one wants to be in a situation where they're doing something negative, where they have to, you know, get to that point where they're so worried about how they're going to make it to the next day that they do something that will change their life or the course of their lives forever.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of, let's talk about mental health. You're not alone, not by any stretch of the imagination. We're seeing young people with the worst mental health situations that I think we've ever recognized in this country. And it's not just Gen Z people, it's millennials, it's parents. Half of parents wonder how they're going to get through the day because their mental health is so challenging. Is that all part of this?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, it's a part of this, I think. You know, I don't think it's too hard to understand why as well. You know, going through, you know, the public school system, you know, our science classes taught us that, like, what climate change is and what's happening. And every single year, it seems that we are told again and again and again by scientists that, hey, we need to do something now. Otherwise, you know, disaster. And then the next year we hear, well, we're farther along. We need to do something now, otherwise disaster.
And this is in your lifetime.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is like, you know, they're saying, you know, the worst of it's going to be coming in 30 years, 20 years.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, so I'm not even be done with half my life by that point.
Not even 30 years. It's hard to breathe in Green Bay right now.
Exactly.
Because of climate change. Because of wildfire smoke. It is hard to breathe in the summers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here.
And I never thought that I'd get to the point where when I see Bill Nye on TikTok or scrolling, it would stress me out just because, again, like Alan said, you know,
he always had something off about
it. He was talking about it all the time. He was talking about climate change. He was talking about the issues when I was younger and watching his show. And now when I see him, it just becomes more and more depressing because you know that things are getting worse and worse and worse.
It's a reminder.
Maybe it's the medium. Maybe you need to wheel out a squeaky cart with a CRT on it and watch it on there. I think that might fix it.
All right. When we come back from this short break, I'm going to ask these guys whether we can fix this or does it have to burn down? Good question. This is Dr. Kristen Lierley. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
Saying time to be.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Upbeat music for our very heavy conversation. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I am here with my oldest son, Abraham, who is a public school teacher, Alan Tipple, the Wisconsin Youth Organizing Manager with Men for Choice, and Landiron Kern, who is a student at UWGB. And before we took this break, I asked you a super heavy question. We've been talking about really big topics, and yeah, kind of hopelessness, all of the things that your generation are looking at right now and thinking, is this even worth it? So can we fix it or do we need to burn it all down?
So at the top of the last segment, you asked, is capitalism bad? And we all kind of sat there with our mouths open. Like, I don't think I want to say that on air. I don't really think I want to stake out that position because, you know, I don't think it's a difficult conclusion to arrive to, but I think that the reason that none of us immediately jumped in and were like, I think capitalism is absolutely necessary and absolutely needs to stay, especially in its current state, is what came after. We talked a lot about how our friend groups and our people in our lives don't necessarily feel like there is a better future out ahead of them. They don't feel like things are getting better. There's just this sort of generational feel of backsliding, and it's really difficult to have an almost smothering sense of things are getting worse and then say nothing needs to change or that our current system is benefiting us. It's benefiting some people.
Mm-hmm.
Elon Musk just made another $27 million or billion dollars today to focus on Tesla.
Mark Zuckerberg's up top three now.
Top three? Oh, good. I love that the scoreboards just keep growing exponentially.
Did you know, by the way, Elon Musk has a foundation that is essentially just a tax write-off? He doesn't actually even donate enough money to charity to really be called a foundation. Yeah. It is, when we rely on people like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett to provide the charitable programs, and then the richest man in the world is not at all charitable, we can't obviously rely on that. We need something different.
Well, and this is what happened in the 1930s. Like the Gilded Age, this is exactly the sort of thing that happened. We had massive consolidation of wealth, and we had this system built upon philanthropy, and it collapsed because it didn't work. And it turned into, you know, bloody riots in the streets and the birth of the labor movement. And it feels like, I don't want to say we're at a similar inflection point, but it does feel like the appetite is there when there's no feeling of, you know, I can get a job. And regardless, no matter how bad I screw this up, I can get a factory job and make $25 an hour and, you know, get a little duplex and put food on a table when that's not an option.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
I mean, AI, all of these other pressures that weren't there in the
30s. As automation picks up, as that option is going away,
uh-huh,
there's suddenly a lot of people with a lot of time on their hands and it feels like
who are not being given the things that they need, like healthcare and food and housing.
It feels like people are about to start saying burn it down, or are in the middle of saying burn it down, but mm-hmm. we don't want to say that yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it necessarily is the appropriate thing to say or necessarily correct, but it's precipitating around. I don't know if you guys are picking up on the vibe too. Like,
oh yeah, lots of burn it down attitude
from both the right and the left. Like,
yeah,
it's hard to find a moderate out there.
And it's understandable when we feel so discouraged by how much the system has let us down. As Len Dyren talked about a lot earlier, you know, and I think that the way to, as far as like a solution goes, you know, fixing the system is going to be a long and hard fight, you know. I mean, we can burn it down, but that's also has its own, you know, struggles there.
Yeah, it's putting it so lightly. There's very few examples of a system that's been burned down and then come out stronger.
Yeah.
I hear Len Dyren saying, though, that he wants to be part of fixing the system, that he has a vision for being part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
That's your plan.
Yeah, I mean, originally my work was, or the work I wanted to get towards was more defense, but seeing as how our government is, I'm going to come out on the other end prosecuting a lot of the people who are representing us today. So,
yeah.
And that's a necessary part of it is, you know, going after the people who should be representing us and are not. And hopefully the legal framework allows for that to happen.
Hopefully there is a legal framework.
Yeah, exactly.
What was the old FDR quote? That's a great idea. Now go make me do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think... something I do want to say is that as far as like a solution goes, I think for people is to like embrace community. Like talking about earlier, the music festival you're talking about, what was it called again?
Mile of Music.
The Mile of Music. There's, and I know in Madison, we have tons of music festivals.
The Sylvia is such a good venue.
Yeah, you guys lots of community events, you know. We started off talking about like the disconnection from like COVID, but I think what people need to do is now we need to reconnect, because if the system gets worse, the people you're going to have to rely on are your neighbors, are your community members. And if the system burns down, those are the same people who you're going to have to rely on. Mm-hmm. So I think,
and if you want to fix the system, those are the people that you need on your side.
Exactly.
And that's what we're seeing people do right now is turn to each other, the people they live next to, the people in the social groups, the people at the schools to build, and the mutual aid that's growing out of that. So that's our solution.
That's a good way to help yourself and to help your community. You know, it might not fix the system, but that's, you know, that's a good way to like help start the foundation for how to build things back in a good way.
And it's something that we can do as individuals.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Len Dyren, what do you think?
I agree. I think there's a lot of work that could be done. Obviously, embracing your community, very, very important. But I also think people have to become more civically engaged. You got to do the duties that we were granted with.
Yes, more civically engaged. And we're going to leave it with that. But guys, I am so grateful to you for coming in today. Abraham Lyerly, my oldest son, public school teacher. Len Dyren Kern, UWGB student and future attorney and part of the solution. And Alan Tipple, he's with Men for Choice. Thank you all for listening today. We've so much more to talk about. I want to hear from you. Send me your ideas for topics, guests, music, whatever you want to hear. This is our conversation and we can talk about whatever we want to. You can find me on all the socials, Dr. Kristen Lyerly on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, everything. And if you missed any of our conversation today, you can always listen back wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and Substack. We'll see you next time.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.